I have tons of paper, just like I have at home. You should see my desk. IGs everywhere. I want to start by thanking everyone in the building. It's been a very busy season, and I'm just so grateful so many of you stepped up, and it's been really a privilege to work with you all during this season where we're just heads down trying to get things done. But I have a few Sunlight Awards that are for specific people or groups. Now, the first one I've never done before is a warehouse team. It says for Go Live, all warehouse staff work jointly to clean up and dispose of materials that we no longer needed in the warehouse. They're also taking advantage of our mezzanine space and shelving all damaged goods. The team documented when to bring in seasonal warehouse staff, processes that needed to be addressed all season long, and specific persons to track newcomers. To be more efficient in the picking area, they integrated most of the Book Shark materials on the shelves, wow, good idea, along with our Sunlight stock, and did color coding to distinguish between the different products. Wow, genius, good idea, whoever it was, good news. They stocked both sections of our picking shelves, which is usually a pick party for the entire company. Thank you all in the middle of our busy season that you did it all yourselves. Good job, way to go. This is a great improvement. They have also received good feedback on the new shipping processes they use to get pods out to conventions on time and in good condition. Also, our SECs, if they were here, they would say thank you. To be at a convention and not have what you need, wow, the most disquieting thing in the world. So if we can get the pods out, perfect glory, hallelujah. Thank you, warehouse staff, for an amazing job in preparation for our busy season. So I will gladly shake each one of your hands.
Thank you.
Good job. Thank you. Good job. Good job. I didn't miss anybody. Nope, your customer relations. Your good job. You're in the warehouse visiting anyway. Good job. Good job. You get to shake a hand. Good job. Good job. Blessings on you. And I'll give the award to Lydia, who will post it in the back. Nobody on that side? Wow. Oh, yeah, one. Come that way. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yep. And I have two more, believe it or not, so I might not get to my speech at all. No, just kidding. Second one is to Liz. Liz, we're just can't be more grateful for the things you do, but let me read what we've said. Liz uncovered an incredible cost-saving element to our catalog production flow. I don't know if you know this or not, but in the past, we used to have an additional catalog production person starting in September. They would work from September until the time the catalog went to bed. This year, Liz did the catalog all until the last 2 weeks where I said, do you think you could use a little help? She went, pricing. Oh, maybe. So we had all of an extra body in the building for 2 weeks. Liz did that entire process by itself. And when John used to do it in the middle, back 100 years ago, he would work, I don't know, probably 80-hour days. So it's just an enormous job, so kudos to Liz to do that. By working with our printer, she instituted a new way to approach reviews, which allowed us to make hundreds of changes more quickly, even as hard deadlines loomed. Had she not discovered and implemented this piece of the process, our current catalog would not be the quality that it is today. Her careful attention to detail and dedication to making our catalog process smooth made a huge difference in what we were ultimately able to create this year and what we expect to be able to do in the years to come. Thank you, Liz, for your singularly unique role in producing the catalog with all the attendant changes and inputs. I don't know about you, but a catalog is just a massive job, so kudos to her. You have helped us learn new ways of working even more productively, especially with our vendor. You're amazing. Boy, I can say it into that. I don't know if you've looked at it all, but it's actually quite beautiful. So good job to Liz. And the third one's to Luke, which I don't set these up. They come to me from the management team. But you know, I can say them with full strength and a blow. Luke has been instrumental, boy don't we believe that, in day-to-day and day-out orchestrating multiple activities and actions needed to sustain our day-to-day operations, along with preparations for Go Live. How many of you have had a question that you went to Luke and said, what do I do with this? Can we all raise our hand? Luke is the glue that keeps multiple teams forging ahead, the web developers, the marketers, and often managers. Along the way, he keeps all informed and integrated regarding the changes underway. Luke single-handedly does much of the appearance and content changes himself coordinating with diverse groups of interested parties seeking changes. He has been the focal point in marketing for anyone that needs to know what is happening, needs something to happen, or to make things happen. His sparkling disposition engages all of us to get the work done well. Thank you, Luke, for your ongoing consistency and leading our team in some of the most crucial areas that impact our users and your teamworks. Great work. Thank you, Luke. And we can all say amen to that. Yeah, come on in. So good job, everybody. Come on in. More welcome, welcome. Ladies working hard. Thank you for providing us with food. Glory. You know, I often talk about time management as I look back at what I talk about over the years. And it's but one of those things that I think is just so important. If we don't manage our time well, we don't accomplish what we want to accomplish in our lives, right? So one of the things we want to get to the bottom of is, how do we do this well? And it's very interesting, as I've been reading different things, one of the things that came up was, time is one of those things that's kind of a slippery thing that we even think about. For example, if you meet a child that you, you know, met when they were three and now they're seven, they go, wow, you've grown. Right? Don't we all do that? And it's one of those things where you have to say, well, of course they grew. Time marches on. But it always catches us off guard because we aren't created to live in time. We live in time, but we're created to live outside of time. So time is just one of those really, really interesting kinds of things. We're created to live for eternity. So time, as we march through life, catches us off guard. My mom is 96, and she'll look in the mirror sometimes. She'll go, I just feel like such a young girl still. Look in the mirror and go, who is that old woman? Well, yeah, time goes on. Now, several years ago, I spoke about setting goals, one of those things we should do every January. And when I talked about that, I talked about, based on Luke 2, 52, and the verse is, Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and people. Basically, when you think about, when you unpack that, it talks about that there's a mental, he grew in wisdom, he grew in stature, which means he grew stronger, he grew bigger, so physical. He grew in favor with God, which would be the spiritual part of ourselves, and he grew in social, he grew in favor with people as well. And one of those things, that's kind of an interesting way of even thinking through, how do we set up goals? You know, what should our lives look like? What should we be trying to do in a course of a day? I thought those were all really, really good things to do. Even though we're long past January, I do want to think through, I want to share with you some of the things that I've set personally as goals, maybe as an inspiration or a thing to think through. For the mental, I, of course, always try to keep up with all my reading. It's a huge part of what I do every day. I read lots and lots of books, and I read magazines, and try to keep up on even what's happening in the business world. I just think that's part of what I need to do. For physical, I'm trying to do the fit goals. I'm doing pretty well. I get to probably about 26 out of the however many you can do in a month. They've been a very effective way of just kind of reminding me to get up and start moving again when that little beeper goes off. For social, I try to say yes. If anybody says, can I talk to you? I go, oh my goodness, set down what you're doing, look them in the face and say, yes, let's us talk. I do want to do that. The spiritual one is the one I want to focus on today because it's a kind of a new way of what I'm doing this year. Each year I set a new way of how to walk in my spiritual walk a little more effectively. When my kids were home, I did all of my quiet time with my kids. We worked on Bible verses because they were in Awana. So it was one of those things where I worked it around what I was doing at home. Now that the kids aren't home, I don't have that discipline anymore, where they kind of keep you moving forward in that very key arena. So when I first started this whole journey, once my kids were out of the house, I did what they called journaling. So I'd read through the Bible and I'd write down whatever had captured my imagination at that time. It was kind of a fun way to start. Then after that, I went to, I read through the Bible in a year. I'll never do that again. I accomplished, but it just felt like it just kind of sucked the life out of even what I was reading, because I'm going, oh, I've got to get through all these verses. And anyway, I did it, and I'm not sad that I did it, but I won't do it again. 1 year, I read through a commentary on the Bible. Wow, that was probably one of my favorite years ever. Every day, I'd read the commentary, and it would highlight the different passages and talk through the things that the person had dwelled from that, and I just thought, oh my goodness, I just gained new insights and new ways of looking at things. This year, I've decided to go through the shelves of Christian titles. For those of you who either work in the warehouse or Bob, who orders samples for me, I have a lot of Christian samples. When I went and looked, I had 10 shelves of books I had never actually even read. I thought, okay, if I do a shelf a year, I'll be done in 10 years. Oh, well, I know what I'm going to do for the next 10 years. And my Christian books are all in alphabetical order, so by author. So I have them from Alcorn down to Zacharias, which is, and I thought, where do I want to start? And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to start with Alcorn, because he's really solid, and we carry one of his titles. I thought, no, I'll start with Z. So anyway, I've been working through, I'm into Yancey, which is just about as fun as you could ever get. So what I wanted to do today was, when I read, as I've been reading through one of his books, there was a chapter I thought, that's actually one I want to share about as we come up to the Easter season. And so I went through the chapter and I thought, well, let me take notes on this. And then I thought, actually, I can't do him justice, even with my little notes. So today I'm going to do something unusual. I'm actually going to read you a chapter from one of his books. It was one of those where, when I read it, I thought, he picks his words very, very carefully. You know, he says he'll spend a whole afternoon trying to come up with appropriate adverbs. And I'm thinking, yeah, I can't possibly, I can't match that. So the title of this one is called Disturbing the Universe. And the first header is called Birth. It talks about Jesus' birth, of course. And it says, at most, a handful of shepherds witnessed the drama, the birth night. Think of it, the incarnation, which sliced history into two parts, a fact even our calendars grudgingly acknowledge, had more animal than human witnesses. There was indeed a murmur of eucatastrophic, a sudden burst of glamour. The universe could not let the visit go unannounced, and for an instant the sky grew luminous with angels. All Hollywood special effect crews would fall dazzled before such a scene. Yet who saw it? Illiterate peasants who failed to leave their names. Very interesting thought. Yeah, come on in. We talk about the incarnation and how it was so unique and so novel. Illiterate peasants who didn't even leave their names came to visit. Then the next session is called Death, Jesus' Death. Calvary was less visibly spectacular. The miracle that lay not in what happened, but what it did not happen. The ugly ritual of violence played itself out with no interference. Angels stayed away that day, held off by the Son of God himself. Even the Father turned his back, or so it seemed. He too let history take its course, let all that was wrong with the world triumph over what all was right. He saved others, let him save himself, they jeered, and that's all the people who were at the base of the cross. This time, this public moment when God appeared downright helpless, the cameras of history were rolling, recording it all. Large crowds watched every excruciating detail of trial, verdict, crucifixion, and death. No one could claim that Jesus did not die. Very interesting point. This is after death. When the miracles of miracles occurred, of course, and that would be the resurrection, only a couple of witnesses stood by. Coarse Roman guards, the forgotten men of Easter. They, and only they, saw with human eyes the stunning scene of the impossible made possible. Showing an incurably human reflex, I love this, they immediately ran to tell the authorities to record the disturbance. Okay, it's just great words. Later that afternoon, the resurrection seemed rather hazy and remote, not nearly as significant as, say, the stacks of freshly minted silver before them. Do we ever wonder at the fact that the eyewitnesses of that great day died apparent unbelievers? Interesting thought. Christmas, Good Friday, Easter, those 3 days are marked on the calendars of half the world. Despite bribes paid the Roman guards and an elaborate cover-up conspiracy, word got out. A glimmer of faith took hold and takes hold still. People sometimes fault God for not making faith any easier, for not making himself more obvious. Another look at those three momentous days may shed light on this puzzle of faith. The first event, Christ's birth, seemed a scandal to all but a few insiders and ragtag guests. The last event, the resurrection, went unobserved but by two who quickly edited their accounts. Only the middle event, the crucifixion, took place in public for all the world to see. How to account for this significance of the cross? It hardly seemed miraculous at the time. What could be more mundane than another dreary execution by Roman occupation troops? Even now, the Memorial Day, Good Friday, can slip quietly by unobserved, a mere prelude to the symbol sounds of Easter. Yet from the cosmos, from the view, say, of an angel just beyond Andromeda, Good Friday was the most surprising miracle of all. The incarnation was unique, of course, but it had faint parallels. Celestial beings had slipped in and out of time zones before, remember? Jacob's wrestler, Abraham's visitors. As for the resurrection, a few humans had roused from the dead in Old Testament times, and Jesus had clearly proved his mastery over death. Then it says, ask Lazarus, who Jesus called forth from the grave and he came out. But when the Son of God himself died on planet Earth, nothing like that had happened before or will happen again. Nature itself seemed to convulse. The ground shook, tombs cracked open, the sky went black. More than death died that Friday afternoon. The Apostle Paul said about that day, and having disarmed the powers and authorities, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross. A public spectacle it was, when Christ exposed the very powers and authorities that men and women stake their lives on. Love this next line, listen. The most advanced religion of the day judged him guilty. Of course, that was Judaism. And the most advanced government carried out the sentence, and that was Rome. Satan's grand design, hatched in Eden, was accomplished in the name of piety and justice and law. Christ triumphed by exposing those powers and authorities as false gods who could never keep their lofty promises. The crucifixion forever set Christ's followers against the powers of the world. Jews demand miraculous signs and Greeks look for wisdom, said Paul. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. Not much has changed in 2,000 years. Today it's the scientists who demand signs and the politicians who look for wisdom. And now as then, the cross looms as a stumbling block of faith. The three events, birth, death, and resurrection, were surely tremors in the cosmos. Yet carried out so mysteriously with such a strange assortment of witnesses, they forever complicated faith. They gave just enough reason to believe, for those who, like the disciples, chose faith, and just enough reason not to believe, for those who, like the Roman guards, chose doubt. That, too, hasn't changed since Jesus' time. So that's why I'm enjoying my time reading through my shelves of books. And thank you all so much for listening. Wasn't he amazing, amazing writer? Blessings on you all.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Yeah, thanks.
How about matters for prayer this morning?